a small prairie town, there was a woman who was known for her simple faith, and a faith that she showed in times of great trials where she had this calm and this serenity. Another woman who had never met her before wanted to get to meet this woman, and so she said to herself, I must find out the secret of her calm, happy life. And so she made an arrangement to meet her, and she said, so you're the woman of great faith that I've heard so much about. No, 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 came the reply. I am not the woman of great faith. I am the woman of little faith in the great God. I am the woman of little faith in the great God. And this is the theme for this morning's homily, people of little faith in the great God. Something that we see in our reading from Genesis, something that we see in our reading from the gospel, and something St. Paul affirms when he says, nothing can separate us from this great God. Even the worst things imaginable will not separate us from him. So I want to begin this homily by asking the question, so what is faith? And as he so often does, St. Thomas Aquinas gives us the classic theological definition of faith. Listen to what St. Thomas wrote. Faith is the act of the intellect. It involves our mind. We have to act. When it assents, that is, it gives its agreement to divine truth. Under the influence of the will, moved by God through grace. Now, I'm going to unpack this so that we can understand what St. Thomas means. So let's take the first part of it. He says that faith is the act of the intellect. So what's our intellect? It's the faculty that God has given us by which we understand the world in which we live. But not only so that we can understand it, but that we can then live purposeful and meaningful lives. So I just had this example in mind. And because I really like to eat, it's a cooking example. So if I was to make a chocolate cake, I have to use my intellect in order to read the recipe. And I have to give my assent to that recipe in terms of what the ingredients are, and those are the ingredients I need to use. So I apply my intellect to the recipe. I then take the appropriate steps, mix the ingredients, cook it, cool it, ice it, serve it with ice cream. What a delicious way to use my intellect. Another word for intellect is the word reason. We may, for instance, look at three or four different chocolate cake recipes and decide by using our reason, this one looks best. This is the one I would like to serve to my guests, if there's any of the batter left before cooking it. And here we move from chocolate cake to divine truth. And listen to what St. Thomas says. Faith is the act of the intellect when it assents to divine truth. In other words, we have to give our yes. But the point here is our intellect can also give its dissent. It can say no. But this is vitally important for us to understand. We are free to choose. We are free to say yes. We are free to say no. But we also then have to be willing to live with the consequences of our decision. And so here what St. Thomas says is that we are giving our assent to divine truth. In other words, we are seeing more fully the Holy Scriptures. We are seeing how the Scriptures have been interpreted by our great Catholic tradition. And that the more we are able to grow in faith, our faith has a true object. It is divine truth. It is not our good feelings or our bad feelings. It is the intellect seeing what God has revealed, and we say yes to it. But that is not enough. Because Thomas says, not only do we give our assent to divine truth, but under the influence of the will, we are moved by God. In other words, what we have come to see, we now have to act upon. The will is the interior faculty given to us by God so that we know how to not only make a decision, but to act upon that decision. So let me go back to my chocolate cake, which I'm sorry is not the best example to use during Lent. But here's the thing. Okay, whoa, I found out that the Joy of Cooking's got the best recipe, and I read it over and over again and say, that is such a great recipe. And then my friends come over to dinner, and we have a nice dinner, and I say, oh, you can't wait for the dessert. And I give each of them a photocopy of the recipe. Would they be pleased with that? I don't think so. They might say, thanks, I'll take it home and make it. But no, I have to move from giving my assent to the recipe to act upon it. I've got to make the cake. How much more when it comes for our need to act upon what God has shown us in his divine truth. The will moved by God to act. And then listen to how St. Thomas ends the definition. I'll read the whole thing through again. Faith is the act of the intellect when it assents to divine truth under the influence of the will, catch this last bit, moved by God through grace. You see, we can only respond to what we now know when we are empowered by grace. Otherwise, it's impossible. And so grace is the gift of God's loving favor shown to us in Jesus Christ, through the mediation of the church and her sacraments. As we live a life rooted in grace, our intellect will have a heightened ability to give our assent to divine truth. And now we can willingly choose to live according to God's revelation. And I want to give an illustration from my own life that is not from cooking. It's this. So back in 2011, 2012, I was beginning to see things in God's word, divine truth, that I'd never seen before. How important the unity of the church was to Jesus Christ, and how he had actually made a way for that unity to be maintained through establishing the papacy. I'd never seen this before, clearly. But now I actually saw, shoot, unity really matters, and double shoot. Jesus intended for there to be a pope, and I really believed it. That I gave my assent to divine truth. But I could have left it there, and it would have been kind of like looking at my recipe and saying, that's a good recipe, but I'm not going to do anything about it. But then I had to allow for my will to be moved by God through grace to make the hardest decision of my life, which was to say, I can no longer be an Anglican priest. I need to become a Roman Catholic. And I never had met a Roman Catholic in Calgary. I'd never been to a Roman Catholic Mass in my life, but I knew I had to become a Roman Catholic. And I had no idea what this would mean for my life in a way. I didn't even know if I would be ordained as a Catholic priest. But I knew, because my intellect believed this to be true, my will had to do something about it. I needed to act. And one of the things I've discovered over the last 6 years in a way I never have before is he really is trustworthy. If we really try to say yes to Jesus, we don't know where he's going to take us. We can't anticipate 2-3 years down the road. But if someone had told me back in the summer of 2012 that on this date in 2018, I would be standing before you preaching and being a Catholic priest, I would say, I don't think so. But God thought so. And this is what I want you to understand. It is always costly when we allow ourselves to give our yes to God's assent, and we act upon it. We see this so clearly in our Old Testament lesson. So here's Abraham. Imagine, 25 years ago, he'd been told, Abraham, you're going to have a son when you're really old. And then as a really old man, Abraham and Sarah have a son. And here's the deal. Isaac goes through being a baby, goes through being a toddler, goes through being a child, an adolescent, and now he's a young man. And it's when he's a young man that God says, okay, Abraham, now I want you to sacrifice him. And Abraham says, God, why couldn't you have said that when he was 13? He's now a young man. Look at all the time I've spent with him. And now you're asking me to sacrifice him. But you're God, I'm not. I guess I'll say yes. But here's the point of the story. As you read through that part of Genesis, we see that Abraham has little faith, but he believes in a great God. And earlier on, he tries to manipulate God in various ways. But by the time we get to chapter 22, when Isaac says, Pop, like, I know we're going up the mountain, but, like, where's the sacrifice? And Abraham says, God will provide the sacrifice. And here's the thing we need to see in this story. Abraham just trusts God with the one thing he knows. He's got to go up that mountain. But he doesn't understand how this is all going to play out for the salvation of humankind. Because one of the things we need to appreciate about this story, this is the only time in the Old Testament where God asks a father to be willing to sacrifice his son. You'll never find it anywhere else. And of course, the reason is this story is to anticipate Good Friday. This story anticipates Calvary. Abraham offers his only beloved son in sacrifice because the father will offer his son. Isaac carries the wood up the mountain and then is laid on that wood, just as Jesus carries the wood up the mountain and is nailed to that wood. And then there's the effect of the sacrifice. God says to Abraham, because of your faithfulness, all of the families of the world are going to be blessed. This year we're reading through Mark's gospel. And one of the things about Mark's gospel that is beautiful is that there's this thing called a kind of literary parenthesis. Right at the beginning of Mark chapter 1, Mark says in the first verse, the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. The next time someone uses the title Son of God is at the crucifixion. After Jesus is dead, the centurion who is standing at the foot of the cross says, surely this is the Son of God. Who's the centurion? He's a Gentile. And he represents how now, because of the death of Christ, the whole world, like you and me here today, are going to be blessed by that sacrifice. And of course, the beautiful thing about this story is that just as Isaac is about to be sacrificed, the angel says, look up, Abraham. And what does he see? A ram caught in a thicket with, interestingly enough, a crown of thorns on its head. The early church fathers interpreted this to mean that this ram was a type of Christ. For in the context of that world, the ram was a symbol for kings, like the kingship of David. But of course, here the kingship is the royal kingship of Jesus Christ, who wears the crown made out of thorns. And just as the ram is caught by its horns in a thorn bush, so Christ wears a crown of thorns, and he's going to be the substitute. He is going to take Isaac's place. He will lay down his life. Okay, but there's one more thing, and this is the most cool part of all. So the sacrifice happens on Mount Moriah. There's only one other place in the Old Testament where Mount Moriah is mentioned. It's in the book of 2 Chronicles, chapter 3, verse 1. And listen to what we read in this verse. There, King Solomon began to build the house of the Lord in Jerusalem on Mount Moriah. In other words, the sacrifice of Isaac was to anticipate the sacrificial system of Judaism for 1,500 years, which then finds its fulfillment in Jesus being sacrificed on Mount Moriah. This is one of the most amazing scriptures in the whole of the Old Testament. And here's the point of application. Abraham didn't know any of this. He went to his death, not knowing how his obedience on that day was anticipating the fulfillment of God's plan of salvation. But this is what Abraham had. He had little faith in the great God. And I believe more and more that for 21st century Christians, for 21st century Catholics, we need to be people who say, I have little faith in a great God. But I want to live this faith with all of my heart. And beloved, you know what that means in part? you're going to hear hard things from this pulpit that it sometimes are going to make you upset, perhaps like Father Jerome's homily last Sunday. But we as priests have a responsibility to share with you divine truth. Because we as priests are going to be held accountable on the day of our death by Jesus himself, in whom we are persona Christi. So how well did you represent me? But here's the other thing you really need to hear. We as priests need to also respect your freedom. We need to respect your freedom to give assent to the teaching of the church, but we also have to respect your freedom to give your dissent to the teaching of the church. But none of us can remain neutral. And that's part of the frightening thing when you decide to become involved in the church. You know more. Therefore, you're going to be more accountable because you know more of the truth. And that's what we are committed to here. We are committed to helping all of us, beginning with me, Father Jonathan, to allow for my life to come under the authority of the divine truth of God and to increasingly give my assent through my actions to what I am hearing. And what a privilege it is to be a priest, to help the beloved people of God, to see more fully the beauty of divine truth. And there's nothing that gives my heart more joy than to see someone give their yes to that truth and then say, this means I have to act upon that truth. 20 years ago, St. John Paul II penned an encyclical called Faith and Reason. And in it, he wrote these words: the church has always considered the act of entrusting oneself to God to be a moment of fundamental decision. That's what Abraham did there. An act of entrusting ourselves to God, says John Paul, is a moment of fundamental decision, which engages the whole person, and it's true. It engages our intellect. It engages our will. It engages our action. And then listen to what John Paul goes on to say. Men and women can accomplish no more important act in their lives than the act of faith. There is nothing more important, says one of our most recent popes. It is here that freedom reaches the certainty of truth and chooses to live in that truth. And that's what I'm appealing to you today. Live in this truth. Live in this beauty. Live in such a way that we can say, God, I have little faith, but you are the great God. And I know that this made all the difference in Abraham's life. It made all the difference in the apostles' lives. It made all the difference in the life of that woman with whom I introduced this homily. And beloved, it will make even more difference in your life and in mine. St. Thomas Aquinas, pray for us that we might discover more fully what you meant when you wrote. Faith is the act of the intellect when it assents to divine truth under the influence of the will moved by God through grace.